Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, it's the Writer's Lounge. This is show number 75, and this is December 8th, 2014. I'm your host, Tom Riddell, and this is the show where we showcase new authors, and shortly I'll be bringing on my co-host, Robin Eduardo. A brief intro to today's show, we're bringing back Jim Allen, and he wrote the book, Nothing Is As It Appears, It's All Smoke and Mirrors, and he'll be coming on and talking to us about those things overhead in the sky called UFOs. And we'll have a lot of fun, and it'll be very interesting discussion regarding UFOs, whether you're for them, against them, or indifferent. I'm sure you'll find a place for the show tonight. So if you would like to call in, you can do that at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. We're here to take your calls, and please do that. Don't be afraid. We don't bite. Robin does, but I don't. So we'll do this, and we'll have a lot of fun. It's a 90-minute show, so there's plenty of time to do that. Pick up the phone and call us. The Writer's Lounge blog is located over at tomriddell.com/blog, and you can listen to the shows over there on the Blog Talk Radio player, located on the upper left-hand side of the page. And, of course, you can find us on Facebook. Just go over to Blog Talk Radio site, click on the Facebook link. It'll take you right there to Facebook. You can like us, and you can also follow us over at Twitter. And if you'd like to contact us the old-fashioned way, you can do that too, twl11@yahoo.com. And upcoming guest authors on December 22nd, we're going from UFOs to the paranormal. We're going to talk to Carolyn Bennett. She wrote a book. It's a fiction book. Coast to Coast Paranormal is the name of it. But there's a lot of interesting stuff in there that a lot of us paranormal investigators will be interested in. So if you're a paranormal investigator and would like to talk to Carolyn and myself on December 22nd, and of course Robin too, you can give us a call at the show. Magic Pen Web Design is our sponsor, and it offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Go over there at magicpenwebdesign.com, fill out the free estimate form, and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And as I said, toll-free, 877-878-1436 or 626-213 or 5613. And here we go on with the show and introducing my co-host, Robin Eduardo, all the way from Mars. No, not Mars. She's in New Jersey. Robin, how are you doing?
My other car is a UFO, and I don't bite. I just nibble just a little bit.
Yeah, see, now you're the zombie, right?
Yeah.
Zombies don't nibble.
Zombies, I would just nibble. I'd be that sweet little zombie that you'd want to keep as a pet, I guess.
Yeah, there's a book in there somewhere. It sounds like a good story.
Maybe, I don't know.
Nibbling.
I like the direction that our topics are going in with the paranormal, and we have UFOs. Well, a continuation of our discussion with Jim Allen and about UFOs, and you're interested in the paranormal, and you're a paranormal investigator yourself. So I just love these topics, and I don't know. I'm just excited for tonight's show, I guess.
Yeah, we kind of do the fiction as we do, and I thought it would be interesting to bring in a little bit more nonfiction. And, of course, I failed to mention that if you would like to be on our show and you would like to come on, let's see, the winter session is filled, but spring will be coming here soon. Well, not soon, but March, April, and May is our spring session, so if you have a book and you'd like to be on the show, give us the email at twl11@yahoo.com. Give us a file of your book there at twl11@yahoo.com, and I'll do a review of it, and we'll try to get you on the show. But contact me first, or contact us, I should say, because it's not just me. So anyway, what else is going on, Robin, in your world? Anything exciting?
Well, actually, it was pretty exciting for me. I've been really, well, you know how I am with my purses and my shoes, so that does just give you a hint.
Okay.
But I've been dying for a pair of Fry boots, the knee-high ones. Remember back in the 70s when we'd wear our jeans, well, us girls, and we'd tuck them into the Fry campus boots that was all the rage? I'm going to personally bring the 70s back. That's my mission.
Wow.
I found a pair of Fry boots. Beautiful. They were like $300. And I haggled. I got them for $153. So I'm so excited. That was my Christmas gift to myself. So
anything to bring back the 70s, right?
Oh, yes.
Including the disco beat of, what was it, 1976? I think we got more into that kind of crazy stuff with the suits and John Travolta.
The satin jackets. Remember the satin jackets? And what else? Let's see. Tube tops.
Yes.
Yeah. roller skating. Hey, I roller skate, so I could bring that back too. But that's about my most exciting news. Otherwise, it's the same old, same old. But I thought it was pretty cool because they're $300 boots. I got them for $153, and they're leather, and they're just in that style that really truly never goes out of style.
Uh-huh.
So I was so happy to nab those for myself. I've got most all my Christmas shopping completed, except for the baking. I still have to do the baking and that sort of thing. But the shopping part of it is pretty much done, and I'm pretty proud of myself for that. Oh, and I have tickets to the Christmas Spectacular at Radio City Music Hall next week.
Oh.
We're going. So, yeah.
Wow.
I'm
going to
get into the Christmas spirit.
Very festive there with your family. And
the Rockettes.
Sounds like a good time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the 70s, and I was once again getting on topic of UFOs, can you imagine somebody from another planet coming to our Earth? Well, I'm sure they've been here, and I'm sure Jim will fill us in on this, but imagine them coming down at around the time that we had the disco stuff and the all that crazy leisure suit stuff, and then having them come back now. Wonder what they would have to say. That would be interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't even need aliens to comment on the difference between then and now. I talked to my daughter this afternoon, actually, and it's so weird, the change just in technology.
Oh, yeah.
From the time that I was, you know, a young girl, growing up in, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, all the way up through till now, and the way things were and where we are now. And it's funny because films like Star Wars and television shows like Star Trek really did predict some of the things that are in use today. So I find that very fascinating and interesting. And you know, our author, Jim Allen, the things that he discusses, it's nonfiction, and some people want to it's kind of like some people will compare it to fiction, some of the things. I don't think I exactly agree with that. I think a lot of the stuff he's talking about really is spot on, and there's a lot of people that would agree with it. It's not fiction at all, but it's kind of like a crossover thing that we've had comic books and film and of course, regular books, just in all sorts of media talking about exactly the topic that we're going to be discussing tonight. And it's just, I don't know. I could go on forever. I love this stuff, actually.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was watching a Star Wars movie here just today, and they had the communicator on there, and Jim Kirk was on his communicator talking to Bones the Doctor. And I noticed that they were flip. I mean, they were like flip phones.
Exactly.
And I'm like, wait a minute. We're beyond a flip phone now. We have smartphones, you know. So are we going back to that? I mean, if that's in the future, if Star Trek really is in the future, are we going back to the flip phone as a communicator? Because that's what they were using.
I just saw, real quick, I just saw something online the other day. It was a meme that was being passed around Facebook that, you know how everybody's using tablets right now for their, you know, to read books and pretty much to use for everything. You go online, streaming video and all that. They're working on a prototype to be marketed, mass marketed, that it's a bracelet that you wear, and when you flick your arm, the bracelet will project the screen onto your forearm. You can actually touch the screen that's projected on your forearm, and it will act like a tablet, but it's in a bracelet.
That's the whole thing
right there. But the size of the screen, I mean, I don't know the exact dimensions, but I thought that was so interesting that we're even going that route, where we don't actually have to carry a tablet. It'll be projected onto our skin.
Yeah, into our arm to watch it full.
Yeah.
Can you imagine watching?
And that you could actually
movie?
Touch. It's a touch screen. You know, that was what was amazing. That it has beams that I guess that are projected from the. From the bracelet that picks up, it's pretty sensitive, and it picks up the motion, and so it can predict what you're trying to, when you touch the screen.
Yeah.
It will work the same. Yeah, wow.
Kind of watching a full-length movie on your forearm, but I don't know if I could get into that. I'd like to see it so you could project it onto like a wall.
Well, maybe if you flipped the bracelet the opposite way, and because really it's just a projection, and then when you touch it, the beams pick up the movement of your finger or whatever. So I suppose it would work just as well on a wall as it would on your forearm. But it's just the ability to carry it around is even that much easier. So I thought that was pretty cool. And of course they have those, what is it? I can't think what they're called now. The Google something, the glasses.
Google glasses, very interesting.
So we're moving
along here with technology. Sometimes I wonder if we're just kind of going along. We're getting into
We're going to blow ourselves up.
The 8-track tape, that kind of died out. That was only a phenomenon for maybe a year or two. But anyway, let's get on with the show here. I just want to let you know that once again, we have Jim here in the wings waiting to come on, and we'll bring him on just shortly here. But I just want to introduce his book to you, and its name is Nothing Is As It Appears. It's All Smoke and Mirrors. It was written by Jim Allen and published by Page Publishing Incorporated in 2014. And you may purchase it over at Amazon.com/Kindle. And I won't get into the full review that I did on the book. I did that in the last show. You can go to my site, www.tomridell.com/blog, and read the review of Jim's book there, but I wanted to touch on a little bit of what I wrote. And I want to just say that we shouldn't discount Jim Allen, what he is telling us in his book. Sure, the market is flooded with conspiracy books and UFO books these days, and it makes us go ho-hum, another one. Jim Allen has information that I have not seen published before. It's well worth the read. It will make you think. It's an easy-to-read book that will give you another view of these subjects that we're going to talk about tonight. Remember, it is about our history, and it is about our country. We should listen, at least, to what the author has to say. And one thing that I wanted to mention, Robin, is as we talk about the UFOs tonight, I got to thinking about how we seem to be controlled in a world control view of things. And politics and religion equals, to me, it equals narrow minds in a way to control our view of the world and other worlds. Now, think about it. If we choose to be more open-minded, which allows in more ideas and thoughts, aren't we really better off? Don't you think so?
Yeah.
So anyway, with further ado, let's bring on our author for tonight, Jim Allen, all the way from Utah. And Jim, welcome to the Writer's Lounge once again.
Well, it's always an honor, Tom and Robin. And one thing I'd like to say, Robin, is after looking at the weather this afternoon, it's quite evident that those boots that you purchased for your Christmas present, I hope very seriously you're giving them to yourself tonight.
Yeah.
You're going to need them.
Yeah, it's a little scary. We've been getting weather events a lot sooner than expected. So it should be a pretty interesting season, to say the least. But I'm prepared.
Yeah.
Would also like to say that in reference to your electronics discussion, they have probably the premier electronics show in Las Vegas, Nevada every year. It's called the CES show, which stands for Consumer Electronics. Mm-hmm. And 5 years ago, it's just like walking into Star Trek, because 5 years ago, they had watches there that had television sets in them that you could pick up almost any channel and sit there and look at your Dick Tracy watch.
Yes. Dick Tracy. That's right.
We only know about that because we're the age that we are. There aren't too many people that are younger that know about Dick Tracy.
Yeah. That gave away the age, didn't it?
That's scary.
It sure did. And Jim, I wanted to mention, we had you on last time, and we talked more of government and subjects related to the government and cover-up last time. But I wanted to touch on something that we just talked about with Robin in regards to the weather. I don't know if we really addressed it there in the last show, but I wanted to ask you, before we get into the UFOs, I wanted to ask you if you could explain what HAARP is to everybody out there.
Yeah, HAARP is what it stands for. It's spelled HAARP, which stands for the High Active Aurora Research Program, which has been going on for a long, long time, but it's a military secret, and there's a full-on military installation built up in Alaska that what it does is it uses Nikola Tesla's science. And his science, of course, the man was a genius, and his science discovered that using what's called ELF, which is extremely low frequencies, he could literally control the weather and cause many, many things in weather, like hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquake, drought, massive floods, anything can be created using this technology. Now, the Russians were the first ones to use it, and they were generating ELF in large quantities back in 1977 from Riga and Tula in Russia, and they were causing absolute disruption of weather all around the planet. and they were experimenting with it in an effort to convert the steppes in Russia to a weather situation where they could grow wheat. And that's why they were doing it. Over there, it's called the woodpecker. And over here, of course, it's harp. But what happened was their generation that they were doing back then not only disrupted the weather, but it disrupted the airplane instruments in all commercial planes and everything else. And all the countries of the world were screaming bloody murder about it. And America was the only one where it wasn't really being talked about. But Canada, it was really being talked about. And in Canada, they started a worldwide appeal to Russia to quit generating this ELF because it was causing such a disruption in the weather and in airplane travel and communications. And basically in 77, it snowed in Miami, Florida, and there was no snow in Anchorage, Alaska, which was phenomenal. Now,
talk about,
out of this,
Jim, talk to us about, and I'm a little interested, really interested in this, because we have Robin on the line here, who's lives in where you live again, Robin?
I'm in Sayreville, New Jersey, but
I'm basically
across from New York City.
Anyway, she's familiar with Sandy, Hurricane Sandy. Why don't you give
us
a little bit of take on your idea of what happened with Sandy?
Well, this is, of course, comes from an awful lot of research and everything. But bottom line is these hurricanes that during hurricane season, I believe we're still in it, aren't we, right now?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, they come across the Atlantic and they basically come into the Bahamas, and then they take a right turn, and they generally go right up the coast, the east coast of America. And you can watch them, and they end up going up above New York and New England, and then they turn out to sea and go out to sea. And almost everyone you ever see does that. Almost everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when Sandy came, we were watching it real close. And, of course, here it comes, and it goes into the Bahamas and then gradually turns right and goes up the East Coast. But it was headed on that same arc to go out to sea. And what really surprised us was that when it got right opposite New York and New Jersey, the doggone thing made a right angle, 90-degree left turn, and went right due west, right into land.
And
I've never seen that. Never seen it.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends out in Pennsylvania who even said they were affected by Hurricane Sandy. And that's unusual for a hurricane to go so far, you know, to affect people that far inland. So, yeah, it was a pretty bad storm, way worse than anticipated, I could tell you that much.
Well,
where are the facilities located for HARP?
The facilities for HARP?
Yes.
The generating, their installation is in Alaska.
Okay.
And by the way, they say that most of this is done through altering the jet stream. Now, the jet stream, as you guys probably know, almost always runs from west to east. And
yes.
I have never seen it go the other way, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this storm turning left and going due west at a 90-degree angle is so interesting. I mean, how does that happen?
They had actually downgraded from hurricane to a tropical storm because they anticipated it to turn, as you know how generally it goes back out to sea. And when it made that left turn at Albuquerque, as Bugs Bunny would say, you know, and went the opposite direction. I mean, they really, they downgraded it, even though they told us to evacuate, and most everyone did. I didn't, because I'm uphill, so I didn't have much to worry about in my specific location. However, it's just amazing that it went the way that it did. But that's why a lot of people in my area still haven't received payouts from FEMA, because they're saying, oh, well, it wasn't really a hurricane. It was a tropical storm. And, you know, people they're still trying to rebuild, especially in my specific area, because I'm on a bay. And so technically it's supposed to be protected. I mean, I'm right on the water. I'm about a block and a half from the water itself. Yeah, so a lot of people are not getting paid out, and the insurance is giving them a hard time because you can't claim, I guess you can't claim for wind and claim for a flood at the same time. I don't know. It's just it's a big mess, and it's because they downgraded it to a tropical storm, and it actually increased in strength when it hit land, because, you know, they were expecting it to go the other way, and it actually increased in strength, and so we were hit a lot worse than even what was reported. I could tell you that.
You see, in almost all these conspiracies, of which they use the term conspiracy theory, I can imagine who created that. And that's to make us all think that all conspiracies are nothing more than a theory.
Minimize.
When in fact the real truth is out there. In relation to this, in September of 1995, in an issue of Popular Science, of which I still have, they announced that a purely scientific research facility, I noticed they used purely scientific, research facility that poses no threat to potential adversaries and has no value as a military target. How dumb do they think we are, right?
Yeah.
Don't answer that. Anyway, the article goes on to say that HAARP also has a secret agenda, and that's pursuing more exotic military goals, such as locating deeply buried weapons factories. That's a good one. Thousands of miles away, and even altering the local weather above an enemy's territory.
Sure.
Now, that is an interesting article, because back then is when this was first getting going. And, I mean, it's telling you, it's like talking out of both sides of your mouth. First, they tell you what HAARP is and that it's purely scientific, and then they tell you, they tell you it doesn't have a military agenda, and then they tell you it could have. So that's a very interesting article that was in Popular Science.
Yeah,
still got that.
Very good food for thought there on that, on HAARP. So everybody out there, do your research once again. Get out there and look that up. It's very interesting what's going on up there in Alaska. And, Jim, let's get on to the main subject here, of course. We're going to talk about UFOs. And if you wouldn't mind, could you read an excerpt from your book in the UFO chapter?
Yeah, I'd be glad to, because this pretty well sums up the situation and what's going on. Actually, this is like the first six or so paragraphs out of my book, and it's the last chapter of the book, and I'll read it. It's as I start to write this last chapter, we have come full circle in my quest to find the truth. When this book is completed, we will have covered a span of over 60 years of incredible experience and activities in my life in this country and the world. If there is anything to gain out of these pages, it is that the human capacity for wealth and power knows no boundary. Anything goes when it comes to getting an end result. In trying to find the truth about that silvery disc that so mesmerized my dog and I back in 1952, I have literally opened Pandora's box. By far, the biggest, longest-lasting, and most complicated and far-reaching conspiracy ever is the UFO and EBE, which stands for Extraterrestrial Biological Entity, one. I guess the first question about why this would be covered up in the first place can be answered with one word, technology. Technology is power, first and foremost military power. Second would be the power to those who control the military. In times past, there have been thousands of eyewitness reports of UFO sightings and landings. It has been suggested we have been visited on this planet by extraterrestrial life forms for over 400,000 years. A learned researcher by the name of Eric von Däniken has written many incredible books on this subject matter, including Chariots of the Gods and The Outer Space Connection. In these books, Däniken cites the many descriptions of UFO and EBE recordings in the Bible, as they would have been interpreted by people in those times. He also talks about probably one of the most taboo subject matters politically and religiously in our society, the possibility that our species could have been genetically altered by these EBEs. Many, many passages in early Bible reflect on this. If you have any further interest in this subject matter, I highly recommend you read the above-mentioned books. And
yes,
that pretty much tells you how long this has been going on, and his books completely describe this, describe the evidence of it, back it up, and it's a subject matter that we could probably do somewhere around 10 or 20 of Tom and Robin's programs on.
Yeah, we could do it. Yeah, we could do a lot.
Yeah.
Jim, around this time, and we're only like 5 years removed from the Roswell incident in 1947 when you were 11 years old and took that walk. I'm just wondering what the people were thinking back then regarding the Roswell incident, and if you as an 11-year-old had any thoughts on Roswell as you went along with your dog on that day and saw that disc in the sky. And just after that, if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about the encounter you had with your friend's dad when you walked through his house, and he told you a little bit more about what happened at Roswell.
Yeah, that encounter didn't happen until later in 1956, but and by then I had a driver's license, and boy, was I cooking then. Anyway, you know, basically, as far as Roswell goes, I didn't have any knowledge of Roswell, or basically almost none, when I saw that in 1952, and that's what started me. And the bottom line was, I knew I was seeing something that nobody talked about, and back then people did not talk about this because they thought you were a nutcase and they'd commit you. And it really was that way. And so there wasn't much, you know, talked about it back then. But when the government came out with Project Blue Book, and in 1953, a year later, I read it, I'll tell you what, it just lit a fire in me, because I knew that they were lying, and they said there was no conclusive proof they exist. They said they were swamp gas or weather balloons or anomalies or whatever, and that they had no conclusive proof. And I knew that a year before I had absolutely seen one, and it was real. I was very close to it, and that's what got me going. And that's how I started trying to find the truth.
Jim, could you describe it from the 11-year-old's eyes looking up? What did you see? What did it look like? What did it sound like? What did it feel like?
Well, I was trucking along to go into this fishing hole, and I don't know whether you ever get these feelings that somebody's behind you looking at you or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I got that feeling, and I spun around and looked. And, of course, I was out in the middle of nowhere. There were no human beings out there, no houses, no nothing. It was about 7 miles from Golden, Colorado, where I live, which only 2,000 people lived in back then. Mm-hmm. And I looked up, and at about a, 30-degree angle, there was a ship in the sky, and the darn thing at that time looked to me like it was as big as a house. It literally terrified me to death. I had absolute instant visions of being vaporized, and that's right out of the comic books back then. There was Buck Rogers and all that, and that's what first came to my mind. And my dog and I just stood there and watched it. The air was electric. It was like there was – have you ever stood under high power lines?
Yes.
Yeah, you feel that humming.
You know how it'll actually lift the hair on your arms, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what kind of what it felt like, only not that strong.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very strong. There was a real high pitched hum coming from it that I could that was barely audible that I could hear, and it just sat there, just hovering.
Wow.
And I looked at it. The dog was watching it. She never took her head away from it. And neither did I. And after I was there about 5 minutes, I figured, well, they're not gonna hurt me. At least I don't think they are, you know, or they would have done it by now. But I actually didn't feel threatened at all by it. And, of course, later on in life I found out why I felt that way. But the big mystery that we haven't talked about that I found out only about 4 years ago, I found this out. And there used to be a test hole up in the canyon there at Ralston Creek where I was going that was a uranium mine test hole, and the DOE had put it in there. Well, since then, the whole area has become a restricted area, and an outfit by the name of Cotter Industries has built a huge mining operation up there. I mean, it's huge. It covers at least three city blocks square, just the buildings. And what we found out was that the largest vein of pitchblende in the world is under the ground right where I was standing when I saw this ship. Now, pitchblende is what they get uranium from. And there's no place, from what I hear, there's no place that has a bigger load of that pitchblende than right there at Ralston Creek, where Cotter Mining Industries is mining it. And that explained, and I mean, this, we didn't learn this until just recently, and that explains probably why that ship was there back then.
Hmm.
Right.
I mean, I don't ever believe it was there because of me in any way, shape, or form. But that would explain why they were there, because they use a form of nuclear reactor, and that may be why they were there.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody, if you'd like to call us here at the show, it's 826. I'm sorry, I got the wrong number. 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. We welcome your phone calls, and we'll be waiting and watching the switchboard for you to come up on that switchboard. So, Robin, what do you any questions?
Yeah,
on what
it's a very interesting thing. The stuff that he's describing, and I knew instantaneously when he was talking about that sort of hum. But it's not really a hum, but you do feel that electricity. I used to live out in Phoenix. Well, not in Phoenix, but Phoenix area. And there's a lot of that. I can tell you there's a lot of activity out there. And I do not care what anybody else has to say about it, whether it be because, you know, there's the Air Force Base and all that stuff going on. So it's always a weather balloon or it's some type of military activity. You know, they're very quick to explain it all away. But I think most of us have heard of the Phoenix Lights and that whole, the way the lights aligned in a triangular shape and the way they were moving, the hovering, and I've seen stuff that I knew were not planes, and it's just, it's hard to describe, but there is a feeling when you see these unusual things going on, and people really are quick to dismiss it and say, oh, you know, you're just, you know, you're seeing things that you don't understand, and so it, there has to be some logical explanation, but there's definitely stuff going on in the world that has been recorded over time, and when I say recorded, either written about, or there's photographic evidence, there's film, there's and like he's mentioned, that Jim's mentioned, there's actual, you know, the government has released some stuff, information about it, and but then they black out certain things, and it's just so interesting to me, because I know in my heart of hearts, if we're here, then somebody else is out there somewhere.
Absolutely. When Jim describes the object that's up above him, you know, it's close enough where he knows what he's looking at isn't an airplane. It isn't a figment of his imagination. It isn't birds flying. It's an object big enough that he can identify as a, well, back then they call them flying saucers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that his credibility in what he saw, even as an 11-year-old, should still stand up today. And anybody that's out there that have seen these flying objects up that close enough where you can actually describe them as something that you know isn't any of the other objects that the government's telling us that it could be or was. So anyway, I find it, once again, Jim, we've talked off the air a lot over the past couple of weeks, and I'm really intrigued by a lot of what's in your book. It's a book that I think is an easy read. I think everybody should go out and take a look at it and read through it and see what they think. Come to their own conclusions, as you said. But there is a few characters in your book, and I say characters because they're actually not fiction, they're real people, but they're people that have made a huge impact on both you and the subject of UFOs, and both sides of the coin here. I have heard people talk about a man by the name of Bob Lazar, and I've heard him called a kook. I've heard him called a very intelligent man who is credible, and so there's both of that. But I want to ask you, Jim, how well you knew Bob Lazar. Can you tell us a little bit more about who he is, and can you tell us about S4? And do you believe in what he said happened at S4?
Okay, I'm going to get into that, and we'll get into it in depth, because that was where I found gratitude in all the years of research that I'd done. I finally found it at the end with that gentleman. But let me say one other thing. Robin, did you live in Phoenix when the Phoenix Lights were there?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I lived in Henderson, Nevada, which is straight north of Phoenix, for 20 years, but then I left there. And right after I left there, I went back down there, and a whole bunch of friends of mine, the night the lights were seen in Phoenix, a ship 2 football fields in length passed over Henderson, Nevada, and over 1,000 people called.
Yes, absolutely.
The switchboards at the police station there in Henderson literally went off the Richter scale. And that ship was headed due south for Phoenix at about 30 miles an hour, something like that. And they said it passed over Henderson, and when you looked up, it blocked out the whole sky, and it was huge.
And so many people seen it, and that's the thing. That's why I say it. There's the government is so quick to dismiss it and minimize it through some alternate explanation. And I'm sorry, but this was not something decades ago where, you know, you could say, well, you were influenced by science fiction and so you don't understand what you're seeing but this is modern times, and I think, you know, we could trust our own eyes to know that this is definitely something that's out of this world, just in what you're seeing and the behavior of it. And I mean, I'm not in the military, so I'm sure they have some really high tech stuff. But I just the stuff that was going on back then, it's not so easily explained away in my mind.
Well, I was talking to Tom the other night, and due to the fact that the military has covered this up from day one, from 1947 on, I doubt seriously that they're ever going to admit that it's real, because if they did, then they'd be saying we lied for 60 years, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And I doubt that they'll ever come clean. I told Tom once that if two or three of them land on the White House lawn and stroll inside and have a talk with the president, you know, that might work.
Well, you know, just real quick before we move on, I did want to say this. If their explanations that this is military-made, that this is not something from out of this world, but something that's within this world, and it's just some type of top secret government or military object that we're not supposed to know about. Well, if that's the case, then why isn't it being used? We're at war right now. I mean, if they've developed this technology, you know, back then, decades ago, then what, when do we get to use this neat stuff? I just want to know.
Good point.
If this is
good,
what's
we
really
got,
going
on. Very good point.
That's a very good question, and the answer is we don't, because we can't.
Because it's
and
not ours.
if we could do it, and we're going to get into this here in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
If we could do it, the launch you saw on Project Orion yesterday, was it yesterday or the day before?
Yeah.
That you saw on the news,
day before?
was a pure rocket. And if we were able to utilize this technology, that wouldn't have been a rocket launch.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been something completely different.
Yeah,
because
we had the old-fashioned splashdown, too. We had the capsule splashdown, which I found absolutely amazing and stunning, because it's taken me back to my childhood. So we sort of reverted back to an old time of the Apollo systems when they used Apollo capsules. So I found that interesting, too.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Bob Lazar, one of the most interesting human beings I've ever come in contact with in my life. Bob has had degrees in electronics and physics and nuclear physics. He was actually a nuclear physicist. He worked at Mason Labs in Albuquerque, outside of Albuquerque, for quite a while in the science end of it there and the nuclear end of it. And Bob was also kind of a racing enthusiast. And Bob had a jet race car powered by a jet engine that he used to bring to the races, and at that time I was also racing top fuel dragsters, and that's where I first met Bob Lazar, was at the races. And what an interesting guy. Anyway, what happened, the reason I met him, because he was in Las Vegas, is because he was hired through references, one of them being Dr. Edward Teller, who was the father of the hydrogen bomb, to replace two scientists that were working on a top secret project out at Area 51, out at the test site in Nevada. And he didn't know what it was going to be. He knew it was going to be nuclear research, but he had no idea what happened until he got into it and found out. And the scientists that he was replacing were killed in a low-yield nuclear explosion that actually was recorded in Las Vegas and described as just that, an unannounced experiment. But what they were doing is trying to cut apart the reactor of one of these ships. Now, that ought to stop your heart. Anyway, Bob was hired to replace them and to work on the propulsion systems of these UFOs. And Bob, of course, he wasn't really into that end of it. He didn't know much about it. And when he got hired to work out there, he was amazed that what he was going to work on when he found out was a propulsion system of a UFO, a flying saucer or whatever. And he was amazed. The problem is, it's kind of like working for the CIA when you work out there. It's the single most top secret military installation on planet Earth, just about. And Area 51, which everybody thinks there's little green guys out there and that this is where it is not where it really is. Area 51 is and always has been and probably always will be used strictly for the testing of all of our advanced aircraft. Now, if we develop this type of propulsion and power and the ability to use it, it would be tested out there. But there's an area that's about 20 minutes from Area 51 that's called S4. And S4 is the single most guarded and top secret installation there is. The airspace above S4 is totally quarantined. If you strayed into it or flew into it, you'd be warned once, and if you didn't turn around right then, you would be shot down with surface-to-air missiles. That's how intense it is. Now, all the hardware that's been recovered over the years that relates to UFO stuff has gone out to S4, and that's where Bob was taken to work. And he worked on this project from 1988 to 1989, in that time period. And that's when I lived down there. So I had off and on contact with Bob, but not very much, because once he was out there, they kept him out there. And I'd see him at the racetrack once in a while. But there were other people involved in this that I also had contact with, who I'm not going to use their names because they'd rather I didn't. But the bottom line was, Bob went full circle with this. He figured out how the ships fly, how it work, how they work, what makes them tick, how they can completely traverse large distances of space in little or no time. And he discovered all these things working out there. And what happened was, he got to a point in the research where he couldn't duplicate the propulsion system of one of these ships, because the main ingredient, the material that he needs, was not indigenous to planet Earth. In other words, it came from somewhere else. Now, what this is an element off the periodic chart, which is element 115. And that goes beyond all the elements on our periodic chart up until a few years back, when they put it on the periodic chart and listed it as alien, if you're ready for this. So if you go into a high school chemistry class, you'll see a periodic chart with element 115 on it, which is at the very end of the periodic chart, and it's listed as an alien stuff. So I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, wow.
Now, the reactor in these ships, which Bob was trying to duplicate, was a matter-antimatter reactor, where what they did is they bombarded a piece of this, a small machine piece of this element 115 with a proton in an enclosed reaction chamber, which instantly turned it into antimatter, which instantly generated tremendous amounts of heat energy. Mm-hmm. And the heat energy is converted through a thermoelectric converter setup that converts it to electrical energy, which converts it to a system that can literally control gravity. And this is what the whole thing is about. You got to understand gravity. Gravity is a wave. It's like a radio wave, of which we're mm-hmm. talking on right now. You can turn this radio wave onto an oscilloscope, and you can access it, amplify it, and make it much bigger by just turning a knob up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you guys are fully aware of this. Well,
yeah, I've heard of LEPs, the government working on, limited electronic pulses. It's parallel to what you're talking about, where they can create events. Go ahead. Anyway, yeah, my brain is definitely, the cogs and wheels are going while you're talking about this stuff.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Jim. And
yeah.
What you talked about there as far as all of that, it reminds me of wanting to go to distant planets, like we're about to go to Mars. It's going to take us about 7 months to get there. But if we were going to travel, if we were an alien from another planet and we were going to travel to this planet, more than likely we're living light years away.
Yeah, light years.
Can you tell us, is there a way we could travel distances light years away? We don't have the technology now to do it, but is there a way?
Absolutely. That's what Bob discovered. And what he discovered was that, to use the best example of the one that he uses, is consider time and space to be an elastic fishnet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fishnet made out of, like, let's say, rubber bands, okay, hypothetically.
Yeah.
Now, if you're at point A and you want to get to point B, which is, let's say, 4 light years away, what you do is you generate tremendous amounts of energy that can be converted into electrical power, which can alter the time-space continuum. And literally, all you got to do is project this energy, which alters the wave known as gravity, and alters it to the point to where you aim it at point B, and the elastic fishnet literally goes instantly to point B, and then all you have to do is quit generating, and you turn it off, and it comes back to point A, and you're left at point B. Now, this is done instantaneously, and it requires tremendous energy to do it.
Okay, this is a theory that actually would work, according, I believe, to Stephen Hawking, if I'm correct, that he investigated this and found that it would work. Also, he brought in the idea of black holes being part of the equation for time travel, or not time travel, but traveling light years away.
Yes, I'm familiar with what you just said. The bottom line here is there's two types of gravity. There's gravity A and gravity B, and gravity A is on a micro scale. And what gravity A does is it's what holds an atom together and holds the protons and neutrons to the nucleus of the atom. So it's mm-hmm. everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere. Everything mm-hmm. you see is matter, and everything is composed of atoms, and that's where gravity A comes from. Gravity B is planetary gravity, and you can identify that real quick by jumping up in the air. You're going to come mm-hmm. right back down, because that gravity is what holds you on the planet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
These propulsion systems that they're using can shift gears. Once they're in flight, they can shift from gravity A to gravity B and use planetary gravity. And also, what Stephen Hawking talks about, black holes, is all gravity-driven stuff. So they've been able to find a way to use the power of gravity to instantly travel large distances of time and space.
Sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of people discussing, a lot of great minds that are working on similar theories, and a lot of it really does sound, I mean, I'm not a scientist, I'm totally lightweight, a little bit of a flake, but I'm so interested in this stuff, and I'm constantly reading, you know, all these different theories, and it makes sense.
Robin, maybe it's those boots.
it just makes so much sense when you read the explanation, because I mean, you could even go online and go on YouTube, and they'll break it down in a film version. So if you can't really follow words, because it kind of, after a while, it becomes jibber jabber in your head, but you could see it explained so simply and with finesse, and it's like, yes, it really is that simple.
Yes,
but
it's probably even simpler than the propulsion system that drives the thermoelectric converters. Mm-hmm. Is only about as big, in my book, I put about as big as an end table that you'd stick a lamp on, in your house. It's very small. And when we think of nuclear power, we think of a nuclear power generator, which is a generating station, which is huge. But this is not the case. This is not the case here. It's a very compact, small onboard power system that they use to alter gravity, and that gravity is their propulsion.
Yeah, let's get back to they. We have talked about aliens in general and using that term sort of generically, but from reading your book and from doing my research, I found out that there's pretty much two types of aliens that could be visiting our planet, and they would be the Palladians, if I pronounce that right, and the Greys. The Greys would be what you would see out there mostly. If you were to open up a UFO book, you'll see a Grey. In fact, there's a Grey in your book, Jim. You have an outline of a Grey in there, a drawing of a Grey in there. But can you tell us a little bit more about these two types of species and what type of beings they are?
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy in this area, but let me tell you this. There's been thousands of regressions done on people that were abducted or that had an extraterrestrial experience, and they regress these people through hypnosis, and there's been thousands of them that have made drawings under hypnosis of the Greys, and their contact was like almost always everybody's contact, they draw the same picture. And that Grey being is what's in my book, is right out of a report, a military report that dates back to 1947, that was the real autopsy, and this report was called Grudge 13, and this was strictly the military's report. And that's what that came out of. And it's pretty graphic, and it's pretty explanatory. And if you get my book, it's pretty complicated to talk about it now, but these critters are about 4 feet high, and they're not green, they're gray, and they have big eyes and very large heads, and they're very mental, and they have come here to experiment. And what they're doing is they're doing biological experiments on humans and animals on their reproductive abilities. And it is said that they have no reproductive abilities and that their race is dying. And this could be the reason. I don't know if this is true, but there's another person out there who's really an expert on this, and that's Linda Moulton Howe. And Linda has published a book that's absolutely incredible, and she's been doing it ever since I was a kid. She's from Colorado, She was a Channel 5 news broadcaster when she was young, and she discovered the first horse mutilation, which the horse's name was Snippy, and this horse was in southern Colorado, and she went in on the investigation on it, and that's what got her started. And what they're doing is experiments to try to – they're genetic masters in the first place, and they're trying to figure out a way to – how would you say – replenish the fold, so to speak, of their own species. And we don't know whether they have, they haven't, but what we do know is that they've been involved in some pretty messy stuff. And I think our government's involved in it also through covering up what a lot of the stuff they've done that's real sensitive. But on the other hand, on the brighter side, they come, these grays come from a star system called Zeta Reticula. And it's on the other side of the sun. And they come from what's called Reticulum 4. And this is where Bob Lazar found out about this information. And when you get my book, it's pretty complicated, but you can read the whole thing and how I found out about it and how I got my hands on a lot of stuff about it. But the bottom line is, as there is on Earth, there's good and evil, right?
Yes.
I mean, we have that, and it's
yes,
a
yes.
cry and shame that it's that way, but it is. And we have people
mm-hmm.
that would never harm a fly. And then we have other people that probably delight in causing people pain. And why this is, I don't know. Obviously, it's in our DNA or whatever. But there is a group or a species that is in our own image that come from the Pleiades, the Pleiadian star system. And these people are like us. They look like us. They are in no shape or form reptilian the way the grays are. The grays are pure reptilians. And the Pleiadians are not. They're human. They're in a human form. And they are the exact opposite of the grays. They are not known for anything negative. And the best contact with the Pleiadians has come through a guy in Switzerland by the name of Billy Mayer. And over his lifetime, he has had tremendous contact with them. And this is not publicized because people just don't want this out there. It's very difficult to get this information. But I sent Tom and you a picture that was taken by Billy Mayer back in the 70s of a UFO that's exactly what I saw in the 50s when I saw that ship. It looks exactly like this one. But so do the Grays. Their ships are very similar. So I can't say that in any way, shape, or form that when I saw that ship in the 50s, I had any idea whether it was good or evil. Other than the fact that it, after about 5 minutes, it started feeling pretty good because I wasn't zapped.
To lure you into the abyss.
Yes.
And I now pretty much figure that that ship that I saw was a Pleiadian ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they are watching us and studying us very close because it's said that we're one of seven living libraries and that this is something that might comfort you. They have said that if there was ever going to be a nuclear war, that it would be stopped before it started because they realized that a nuclear conflict nowadays, a thermonuclear conflict, could definitely destroy the Earth, and it would destroy the living library that is the Earth, supposedly.
Yes.
And these people have gone over missile silos in Wyoming and Montana, and there's all kinds of above top secret eyes only reports of them bringing a ship over the top of a missile silo and taking our system, our failsafe system, from DEVCON 1 to DEVCON 5 instantly and then shutting it back down. and there's been military personnel in these silos that have committed suicide because of that, because they shot themselves because they'd rather shoot themselves than push the button, and they thought they had to push the button. That's how close they came. But if they have that ability, and there's so many reports of it, then maybe there's hope. You know what I mean?
Maybe man's not
going to destroy himself.
Yeah, and I hope you're right with the Palladians, and I'm wondering if that ship that you saw at 11 years old, if they came back to you and they landed and you met up with this Palladian, how would you act and what might be your first question to them?
Well, that's a really good question, because I wouldn't know if they were Pleiadians. In other words, they could be Greys. And I'll tell you what, if it was a ship with Greys in it, I'd run.
Okay.
With what I know now, I would run.
If they look like us, how would you approach them and what would you ask?
Oh, I'd have a million questions, which, of course, so would you or Robin. We'd all have a million questions to ask. And I wouldn't be the least bit afraid of them, from what I know now.
I have something I want to ask you, Jim. Just in relation to the Pleiadians, do you think it's possible? Because I've heard this before. Do you think it's possible that we were seeded here by the Pleiadians?
Good question.
Well. Tom and I, this is a very controversial deal. And if you remember, when I read you the first 5 or so paragraphs of my book, I said right there before it goes further, I said that basically one of the most taboo subject matters is politically and religiously embedded in everybody. You know, it's what we've been taught. And as a result, and also with Von Däniken's research and everything, in his research, he said we've been visited here for 400,000 years, and he can prove it. And I believe him. Because I believe these beings could be as much as a million years older than us.
Right.
And they very well, their technology explains that it's far beyond anything we have or have the ability to reconstruct, which Bob Lazar proved. But Bob said, you bring me a dump truck load of element 115 and I'll build you a ship. That's what he said. So there you have it. Now,
I also noticed that Bob has been on the YouTube, a few YouTube stations that I've seen, and he's pretty much retracted everything that he said about UFOs. Is there any reason why he would do that? I imagine, just off the top of my head, I would imagine that the government might have gotten to him. Do you think that that's possible?
Well, when all this went down, his life was being threatened. And basically, he was put on George Knapp's Channel 8 investigative reporting on Wednesday nights, and he did a 2-part show that described all of this, explained the whole thing, because friends of his told him that if he went public with it, they wouldn't waste him. In other words, they may do other things, but they probably won't kill you. Huh. And back in those days, man, they dug a lot of holes in the desert, if you know what I'm saying. And Bob, there were tremendous repercussions. And I was there when this was happening, and I've seen it, and it's for real. Right after he went on George Knapp's show, he made the front page of the Review Journal in Las Vegas, and they accused him of being an absolute nutcase, crackpot. They said he owned a brothel in Clark County, which was illegal, and he was being prosecuted for that. And all of this is bunk. It's all bunk. I'm here to tell you. It's Bob was the real deal. In fact, Bob's intelligence level was about 50 times above mine. And I mean, this guy was a regular Stephen Hawking. He really was.
Mm-hmm.
It's up and walking around. And he was the real deal. And I think that they literally destroyed his life. Even his education was erased right at the schools where he went and where he got his PhDs and his degrees was all erased. His whole background was erased. His
Wow.
employment background was erased. They said he never worked at Mason Labs in Albuquerque, and they said that he never had any part whatsoever out there at Area 51. And they literally destroyed his life, so to speak. They just didn't waste him, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so you're saying
as far
that
as I'm
it's just easier for him to join along with, it was just a, you know, redact his statements and say, it was all a bunch of gobbledygook
sure.
I was talking
yeah.
back then. And, yeah.
Yeah, and I find it really amazing that in this world that we live in, there are still people out there saying there's no evidence of this actually being truthful. In other words, there's no UFOs. It is swamp gas. It is all these other things. But I have said that there's a lot of physical evidence right in front of our eyes, and we've seen it, and it's there now. It's the crop circles in England. It's the cattle mutilations that are going on. It's the pyramids. All of these
yeah.
items, all of these things have been studied scientifically. But people
yeah.
still look away, and I wonder why they're so hum about it all. Do you have any ideas or any thoughts on that, Jim?
Well, it's been premeditatedly pre-planned for us to be dumbed down and for us to not question authority. And, I mean, this is George Orwell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
1984.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
everything he said has come true, plus 100% more of it, you know,
yeah.
in much
we
more
have to be
complicated
good little,
ways.
Good little worker bees. That's it.
Yeah. Well, you know, this has been a 100-year plan of theirs. And the bottom line is they've just about got it all done. They've about got it all in place. And they had to get complete control before they could exercise everything they've done. It's like we discussed in the first time we talked, we discussed the Federal Reserve. Well, they passed the Federal Reserve Act through wholesale bribery and everything else, got it passed, but they knew they couldn't sell it to the people unless they could control the press. So they went
mm-hmm.
right out in 1913 and bought every newspaper in the country. And
mm-hmm.
out of that, of course, has come control of the television.
Right.
Okay.
And there are people that have had radio talk shows like you that have been threatened up one side and down the other. And
definitely
yep,
the media
them.
Is manipulated so that the masses can be spoon-fed information. I mean, that does play out, and I'm not going to get into a whole anti-political thing, but I mean, you know, because I don't want to say one way or the other, but it's definitely the media does control the way we feel about things depending on what party we align with.
Sure.
And that's pretty effing, especially today, you know, Republicans
sure.
versus Democrats, and it's like this whole it's ferocious and vicious, actually. So people kind of align themselves with one party or the other for fear of having somebody snap at them. Oh, you know, you're an idiot, or, you know, you believe in the lies, or you're, what do they call it, sheeple, you know,
yeah.
right away.
Yeah.
Oh, well, if you believe that, then you're a sheeple.
I want to jump in here real quick.
Well,
we do have a call on the line here, and we've got about 10 minutes left of the program,
okay.
so we want to get this caller in. And caller, you're on the Writer's Lounge with Jim Allen and Tom and Robin. So what's your question or comment? 585 is the area code. Go ahead. You're on the air. Okay.
Uh-oh.
I guess they decided they were stage fright, I guess, set in, and they decided to go away. So, anyways,
you can't blame them, can you?
No. We're talking UFOs here, Jim. You know, a lot can be happening up there while they're on the phone. So maybe that was one of the Pleiadians.
Yeah, maybe it is. Will you please let me know?
Yes, I'll let you know if they call back. It might have been one of them. But I also wonder, we're talking about this pre-programmed or programmed by the government to believe what they want us to believe. And I absolutely 100% agree with you. But I'm wondering if one day we walked outside our houses and we looked up into the sky and the skies were literally filled with UFOs, how do you think people would react? Do you think that they would, I don't know, do you think they would go running to the government to help, have them help us? Or what do you think would happen?
Well, I think the whole thing would hinge on what the UFOs did. In other words, if it turned into Independence Day,
that's right.
Everybody's going to run for a hole.
Right. Or what was that television show they had in the 80s or the 90s? Was it V? Where they assimilated and then wanted to eat us.
And it was that's why they were sour. Drinking
they
sour
were,
milk, I think.
Robin,
one of
they were fattening. They were fattening us up, you know.
Yeah.
Get us ready for dinner.
Absolutely.
Very interesting, though. Go ahead.
Yeah, Robin, ahead, you said some things that are the key to this whole deal. The Republicans and the Democrats and almost everybody in America is a Republican or a Democrat.
Right.
And they're arguing between themselves, then you're saying, well, those damn Democrats, or you're saying those damn Republicans, and as long as you're doing that,
we're not really
you're
paying
not
attention.
Seeing what's really going on
That's
underneath.
<right.
laughs>
So the moral of this story is there's no real difference between a Republican and a Democrat. It's nothing more than a smokescreen to keep us busy thinking there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the opening
of the show, I had mentioned politics and religion, and I really never really thought of it in this way because your book plays into a lot of my thinking on this, but everybody's into politics and religion, and everybody picks a side or picks a religion. But what that's really doing is narrowing down our thought processes and closing off our minds to the possibilities that exist out there in the world and in the universe. So if we want to keep doing that, then we're going to keep being corralled by the government and these world powers. I'm not just talking about governments here. I'm talking about religions. Not that all religions are bad. Not that all governments are bad, but I think people have to broaden their horizons a little bit. And, Jim, we only got about 6 minutes left, and I just want to hit you with this one and get your thoughts on it. But as everybody knows, at this time in American history, something amazing has just occurred. We are on our way to Mars, and I think that is something that people should be paying attention to. Not just all the racism that's been coming up here recently, but we are doing something right now that is extremely important for humankind. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the colonization of Mars and the challenges that would provide us.
Well, I'm going to tell you something that I can't tell you the whole story, but I'm only going to tell you what I know. And what I'm going to tell you is I've seen two gun sight photos that came out of NASA in color, and they're the regular, they've got the perimeter gun sight increments on them and also the crosshairs. And these photos were taken by Mariner. And there in one of the photos, there's a face on Mars. And in the other photo, there's three pyramids that duplicate Cheops, the Cheops complex in Egypt. And this is on Mars. Now, this had to be hand-built, okay? And it's for real. NASA knows it. And who knows? Maybe what they plan is in 2015 or 2020, maybe they plan on going to Mars and telling everybody, gee whiz, there is other life out there, or whatever. Now, a lot of people believe that Mars colonized this planet. And I told you, Tom, about a movie named Mission to Mars. And I'd highly recommend everybody watch that movie because it's very professionally done, and it's very interesting. And it does leave you with an open mind that we very well could have come from Mars at one time when Mars's climate would support life.
Yes. And then, so, and Jim, we're pretty much at the end here. I guess I could lead in by promoting my book, Dream Delirium, A Mars Connection, which kind of touches on what Jim just talked about being seated with Martian life here on Earth, which ends up being human. But I want to thank you again for being on the program. And real quick, where can listeners find you?
Well, you can't yet because I'm not set up yet, but I will be set up with Facebook and what have you in the future on the computer. But you'll reach me through my book. My book's available through Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, and any place you want to basically go after it, you can order it. And it makes a great Christmas present for Dad, especially if he's complaining about the politics of the country.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, Tom, I want you to know one more thing. I want you to know that I will expect an autographed copy of your book, your new book, when you get it mailed to me.
Okay, I will do that. And my friend, it's a pleasure. I've gained a friendship here, not just another author on the Writer's Lounge, but Jim and I are going to continue to talk. I will continue to keep you people up to date on what's happening on this planet and also overhead in our skies. So with that, I want to thank everybody for being on the program. Tune in next time, 2 weeks from today, when we'll talk to author Carolyn Bennett, and she's written Coast to Coast Paranormal. So we'll venture into the paranormal. And as we say on the Writer's Lounge, read that book and let the story begin. And good night, Robin.
Good night. Good night, Jim.
Good night, Robin. It's been a pleasure.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. There and wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Thank you.